delivered by Grubhub.
Keith Murphy.
If you ain't first, you're last.
Andy Fails.
I pity the fool.
It's the Murph and Andy Show, powered by AD.
You can do it!
On 1460 KXNO.
Sports and more until 4. Alongside Andy Fails, I'm Keith Murphy. Andrew Downs is producing. We'll talk to retiring Iowa Hawkeye assistant coach Reese Morgan here in a few minutes. Also get into the Cyclones, but we start with top of mind. It's really top of mind for us because the roads are bad. They're slow out on the interstates. People heading to Arch Madness, or if you're a Hawkeye fan going all the way to Madison or traveling anywhere and you're hearing my voice right now, you have to be very careful. And Andy, this hit home for us because our friends, colleagues, Justin Cerency and Randy Schumacher got in a 5-car pileup that shut the interstate down, and that happened in Missouri, right? Not too far from St. Louis.
This would have been, I believe, north of Hannibal.
Canton, Missouri, I think was name of the, at least the town, that stretch of highway.
Not absolutely sure where that is, but I think it's almost to Hannibal. I'll have to look it up. They got in a more than a fender bender. They wrecked the whole front of the station car. I don't know if
the news car looks totaled. The good news is they're okay. There's some expected soreness in the 5-car pileup, including Justin and Randy, but no major injuries of any kind, and for that we're thankful. But it is a reminder. Justin had been, and from the passenger seat, I'd point out, he had been sending videos of how bad the travel was and how it was kind of whiteout conditions in some parts, and then boom, they're in a pileup.
Yeah, so this is basically not too far south of the Iowa border in Missouri. So you'd be headed to St. Louis on Highway 61 at this point, and that's Canton, Missouri, is about half an hour, 40 minutes north of Hannibal, Missouri. But yeah, I mean, this has happened to us before. This happened to me and Sean Terrell when we were coming back from covering Drake in Bloomington. And it's just a bad time of the year, right? I mean, snow on the highway, and people are still trying to travel highway speed, and you get a real patch of snow, and the visibility stinks, and you get in a big old wreck like that. That stinks.
They were on their way to the Missouri Valley Conference Coach of the Year luncheon, and in the least surprising news since Megan Gustafson won Big Ten Player of the Year, Darren DeVries is the Missouri Valley Conference Coach of the Year. As soon as that happened, Drake already, they had the social media out there immediately, and this was one you could go ahead and plan. You could go ahead and know that he's going to win Coach of the Year. He should get consideration for National Coach of the Year when you consider the position he was put in when he took the job, that he had to assemble a roster, and that he lost his senior leader and arguably best player in the first game of the conference season and went on to tie for the conference championship. It's an easy vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to believe, right? I mean, he Darren DeVries' name has been out there for a long time, right?
Including for the Drake job, yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, Drake has, I think people have lobbied for Darren DeVries like the last three times the job has been open.
Travis Justice of the Morning Rush every time Drake has had an opening.
Yeah, and the Woodleys. I mean, all of his friends and connections here have lobbied Drake to give him a try. And this time, Brian Harden did it, and he just made it look so easy. I mean, he made that job look easy, and we know it's not.
Right.
It's a really, really difficult job. And he did it at a time when the roster was depleted. The players that were left had to be sick of switching head coaches. I mean, he did do a great job of rallying a few new players, but then again lost the best of them to Nick Norton to injury. And then they didn't get... They didn't quit. I mean, he was in here and he said, well, we're not calling off the season. They got better after that. I mean, that's amazing.
They were 1-3 in the Valley to start and ended up going 12-6.
Won 12 games in the Valley, which you look back over Drake's record going all the way back to the Final Four teams, you know, 50 years ago, the times that they won double digits in the Valley are few and far between. I mean, they're almost nil. So, I mean, this has been the best team, easily the best team since the 2008 team, and one of the best Drake teams of all time, which, you know, is not saying much. But again, no one else has done this. And there was Darren DeVries the whole time, right over there at Creighton, wanting this job, really did want this job,
yep.
An Iowan. I mean, I think there were some people that thought that he couldn't be the answer because he was
still
was
there.
It was too easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was just right there. The guy that wanted the job, you kidding? You didn't have to have a giant national search firm look for him and uncover him. You know, half the country away, he's been right here all the time.
And now he was so good in year one, other schools are going to want him. So,
yeah, I mean, including for a places day. Like Creighton, I think, where, you know, they haven't been as good this year without him. And, you know, there's maybe a Nebraska job open. Who knows? I mean, what I know is that as a Drake fan, even Darren DeVries, who when he came in here, I felt, okay, well, at least this guy is not leaving. There's no chance. Now I'm still worried, right?
Well, and for us as a show, AD, you can't just call over to Drake now and get Darren DeVries to come over here and join us in studio on a moment's notice. Now we're probably going to have to go through some handlers and agents.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a whole firewall of reaching him up. You know, the days of him returning our messages are over.
He's
big time coach of the year. congratulations to Darren DeVries. That's awesome. He wins coach of the year. Now, what in the heck is wrong with the Cyclones? We investigate. Okay, at West Virginia, bad West Virginia. It's a bad team, a bad season. They've had suspended players. They've had injuries. They're just not good. They are out of last place now, thanks to last night. Iowa State is down Mariel Shayok to a foot injury. More on that later. And the Cyclones come out with whatever the opposite of competitive fire is, that's how the Cyclones came out.
A pass left wing to Matthews. His three is good. Are you kidding me? These guys are burying threes. 28-20, West Virginia.
And none of these guys are even 30% three-point shooters.
Here's Halliburton. Tries to put it on the floor against Matthews. Lost control of basketball. Haley up with the steal. West Virginia on the run. Haley down the lane. Running right-hander. Good. 10-point lead, West Virginia. 13 in the game for Haley. Timeout, Steve Prohm. Cover to the baseline. Hooks a pass cross-court to Harler. Out to Napper. A three on the way. Yep. Brandon Napper hits the three. 34% of the season. And West Virginia up by 18. Here's Wigginton to the right corner. Weatherbab a three. No. And the rebound controlled by Haley. 18-point lead in the ball for West Virginia. 1:50 to play in the half. A three by Harler. Good. Oh, my goodness.
That's John Walters and Eric Heft on the Cyclone Network, courtesy of Learfield. Now, Andy, there is some frustration in John's voice there to this. These guys that can't normally hit shots are suddenly the best three-point shooting team in the nation. But some of that is just because Iowa State's defensive effort is so poor.
Yeah, they were just running around. It looked like they had no plan. You know, that game, even in the first part of the second half, was the best part of the game for Iowa State, right? I mean, it's tied 20-20 with 10 minutes to go in the first half. But even that first half of the first half, they didn't look good, right? I mean, they still looked like they were a mess.
Because they're far more talented than the team playing.
Yeah, they are. But, I mean, they're clawing and scratching to keep the game tied. That's tied at 20, and then from that point on, the second half of the first half, the final 10 minutes of that half, that's the worst 10 minutes that I've seen from Iowa State in I don't know how long, right? I mean, they were completely lost, and West Virginia was hitting everything, getting their own rebounds, kicking it back out. I mean, they did play well. That game didn't surprise me at all. I think there's probably other people that felt the same way. That looked primed for that type of game. I think it wouldn't have mattered if they had a healthy Shaq or not. They'd have still lost.
I thought Iowa State was going to play better. I did, because we were all at lunch together yesterday, and I got that text from a guy inside Cycloneville, and he said, "Yeah, this team is a mess. There's infighting. There's agendas. They may not win another game." This is not a pessimistic guy. But I still went the other way and said, no, I even wrote him back. I said, I think they're going to be fine. They're not going to lose at West Virginia tonight. They didn't just lose. They got stomped. They lost to West Virginia by 15.
West Virginia had nothing to lose. Right? I mean, they had nothing
to lose. It's senior night.
Yeah, senior night. They didn't have any seniors. Didn't matter.
But it's because they've all been kicked off or hurt. Yeah. Because Huggins said he wants at least guys who are going to play hard.
Six freshmen. They had nothing to lose. They were having fun with the whole thing, and Iowa State was just in a position, just the perfect position for a team like West Virginia to catch them. But I mean, that was just a disgusting first half of basketball. I mean, you could see it all over Twitter. You could just feel it in the team, and I felt bad for the team. I felt bad for those guys. They clearly just didn't have a handle on there was no handle for them to grab and set that thing right. They were just running around.
And it would get worse. Back to the game. At halftime, this exchange between John Walters and Eric Heft tells a lot.
Almost a surreal halftime score, 54-33. West Virginia leading Iowa State by 21 at the half. And it's time to select today's Hogemeyer Hybrid's first half top performer. Was there one, Eric?
No.
Okay. And that is tonight's Hogemeyer Hybrid's first half top performer.
Well, that sponsored segment that you just cannot participate in.
Yeah, you just, no. And Eric Heft is absolutely right there. Now, the speculation that this team has infighting looked more credible when Michael Jacobson started yelling at Talen Horton Tucker, and Tucker yelled back.
Oh, and Horton Tucker and Jacobson yelling at each other here, Eric. They're really in each other's faces. Now, this is the kind of stuff that can happen when you're struggling. And finally, their teammates get in between them, 77-62. And Wigginton to the free throw line for Iowa State.
This is the kind of thing you can overreact to, that I can, that anyone can, because you don't really know if it means everything you think it might mean, because it can happen when you're winning. It can happen in offices. It can happen between good friends. It can happen between happily married couples. Something rubs you wrong, and there becomes this heated moment, and then you quickly move on. But the other way is it could mean everything. You just don't know. I mean, it clearly shows frustration, but is that, you know, is it a microcosm for bigger problems, or is it one moment where Michael Jacobson got frustrated and he points down to the court like Talen Horton Tucker, get over here to the huddle,
because they're all huddling up. And he's young.
He just turned 18 or just turned 19, I think, one or the other. He's very young, and I'm reminded as when I see that age of the maturity I lacked at that age, and many people lack at that age. So there's frustration there between an older veteran and a younger guy, and it boils over. And they're not quite, the teammates aren't quite holding them back from each other, but they are making sure it doesn't get even more out of control. And it's a bad look. I mean, it's a bad look, especially because it happens at a time where everybody's hearing these rumors that this team, you know, these guys aren't on the same page, that they're not playing for the guys on the name on the front of the uniform, they're playing for the guy on the back of the uniform, all of this, and then you have this kind of exchange, and it just looks bad.
Yeah, and I don't know what happened. I don't know what was said. What we got was basically like one or two frames of a long video, right, that had been playing out the game. We don't know what was said. It looked like Jacobson was frustrated at Talen Horton Tucker for not getting with the rest of the team in that huddle and pulling together, like, or maybe he was
hustle under the huddle.
He was blowing it off or whatever, and so he got angry at him, and THT snapped back a little bit, and you know that happens all the time. I don't know that it's a huge deal or it means everything, but what it looks like is a team where some of them are angry about the way things are going on, and then some people are just going the other way and saying, oh, forget this game, forget this season or whatever. Because people react to adversity differently, right? I mean, mm-hmm. some people get angry and they want to buckle down and brace, and other ones just say, they want to let go and forget it. People react differently, and you mix those two together and it doesn't seem to fit. But I don't know. It looked, I mean, Jacobson had a run-in with a West Virginia defender earlier in the game where they had gotten to pushing and there were some technicals called, and you know, that was a fiery situation where it looked like Jacobson was, it looked to me like he was being an intense competitor. So I would give him the benefit of the doubt there, and maybe carry that over to this situation and say he again is showing some fire, and people wanted to see more of that from the rest of the team.
Then late in the game, down 89-73, Cameron Lard can be seen laughing on the bench. Now, this is just a couple-second shot, but it upset Iowa State alum Nate Toit, among others. Nate grabbed it on his television. He put it out there. You know, Nate's a big sports fan, played Major League Baseball, played baseball at Iowa State back when Iowa State had baseball, and he didn't like it. He thought it was a bad look. Now, I think many people feel like when you're losing that badly, a smile should not cross your face, that you shouldn't be laughing. It appears that who is standing, AD?
George Condit.
Is it Condit standing? We've heard reports the student section's all telling him to sit down because they can't see past him, or maybe because, you know, they're just looking for a guy to razz. And maybe, we don't know, that this is making Cameron Lard laugh.
Well, he had filed out, right? So they were saying what the students are saying, sit down, sit down,
so, yeah.
And then he kept standing.
It does look bad when you're getting stomped.
Especially as a fan who's sitting in your living room and this is like ruining your night.
Yeah, you want them to care as much as you care.
And they do, right? More often than not, they care more. But as a fan, you never want to see that from your team because you're sitting there. You're pissed off.
He's
sitting there and he's laughing.
You want everybody to react the same way that you do,
right,
too.
Yeah, right, exactly.
West Virginia wins by 15, so Iowa State has now lost 5 of 7. Here's Steve Prohm after the game.
That's just not very good. I mean, bottom line, just the first half was terrible. That's basically it, to where, you know, I just think we've let some things really get us off track. You know, 3 weeks ago, we're a really good team, you know, and from the outside world, you know, I was a good coach and we had tons of talent, you know, and now, you know, now the narrative's flipped to where we're soft and, you know, coaches, you know, whatever. And, you know, the biggest thing I told him is just, man, I hate it for these guys from a standpoint to where these last 3 weeks, we just been terrible. Most importantly, just having represented Iowa State the right way and the way we've competed. Forget wins or lose, you know, our record, just, you know, solid record and all that stuff. We're just not competing the right way right now. That was what we've done for so long this year, but just terrible, you know, in the first half.
Steve Prohm is likable. He's honest. And there are a lot of people rooting for him. He's got to figure out a way to get this team back on track. I mean, they were bad last year, and this, for a fan base getting restless here, you can't follow that bad season with an absolute implosion, and that is what it looks like right now. And he's frustrated. He's still being candid. He also spoke about Mariel Shayok. There were rumors everywhere that he had been injured in a after practice fight, what Travis Hines called the practice fracas. And Steve Prohm, to his credit, did not try to cover that up or say it's a whole bunch of hot air about nothing. He said, yes, a physical practice got out of control.
Just so everybody can clear the narrative on this, man, we had a really physical practice Monday, you know, because we needed one. Kind of went back to old school from a preseason type practice because we needed to get some of the softness out, get back to some physicality, and it carried over a little bit. That's it. No more, no less than that. No, there's no big story. Happens all the time. Practices, you know, been coach 8 years. Had it happen probably every year, you know, at some point. And the injury with him is actually kind of a fluke deal how that part happened. But, yeah, you know, we had a couple you know, scuffles and pushes. That's life. That's just, we had a physical practice. That's it. And there's no more, no less than that story.
Did he kick a door?
No.
So what, he's got an injured foot. Can you be more?
Yeah, he got tangled up. You know, that's it. It was kind of like I said, a fluke feel. They were by the door, you know, and the door got open and it got caught. That's it. It's no more. And I don't have an exact detail on it, but nobody kicked a door. And nobody kicked anybody. You know, that's not what happened.
Is it a broken toe or a
no?
Foot?
Just I think the term they're just using is left foot injury, and that's it.
Okay.
You know,
what's his deal for Saturday?
You know, we'll see. You know, obviously it's senior night, so I got to see. But if he even needed one more game, just so he's really good, because it's nothing that's going to drag on. Like he just needed a couple more days just to get some rest on it. That's why just the boots all precautionary, all that stuff's precautionary. So my biggest focus for him is just to have him 100% for the tournament for sure.
I credit there to the Des Moines Register's Randy Peterson and the Ames Tribune's Travis Hines. I believe they're the only two local reporters there. So yeah,
and that audio is directly from the Ames Tribune YouTube page. So thanks to Travis for posting that.
Yeah, so that it's important to note here that those are the two sources for much of this information, because KXNO did not have somebody there. Channel 13 did not have somebody there. We're relying on these guys to find out some of this information. They did. So credit to them there. It's also worth noting, as you hear that, Steve Prohm says the narrative earlier in his post-game interview says the narrative has switched to we might be kind of soft, but then right there in a different moment, he says we have this practice because we're trying to get some of the softness out. So he's acknowledging that narrative in his mind is accurate, that's not just some made-up fan thing, that they do need to get some of the toughness back.
Well, yeah, and he acknowledges just how the entire narrative can turn over just a couple of weeks.
Yep.
He's a great coach, doing a great job coaching these guys in a season that started with a ton of adversity.
Potential Final Four team.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you're talking...
It was written nationally.
Yeah, you're talking about a team that is kind of a popular dark horse pick for a number of national pundits. Or a team that just has this crazy unlimited upside, right?
Right. And downside,
but they have been inconsistent all year, right? I mean, they have been inconsistent all year. They have had losses that we didn't see coming throughout the year, right? I mean, you thought they were going really well, and then they go to Iowa and they get blown out, right? And then they're cruising along really well again, and then they go to Baylor. Right, and they lose.
K-State at home.
I mean, it's just happened over and over again, and it almost seemed like they were kind of wrestling with one side of, you know, the dark side and the light side. And at this point, the dark side has got them flipped onto their backs right now, and they can't get up.
So we have two quickie polls here presented by WCI Pools and Spas. Let's start with the first one, AD, and just some bad looks on a Wednesday night that went sideways for the Cyclones.
Which was the worst look for the Cyclones on Wednesday night? Losing to West Virginia by 15, Taylen Horton Tucker and Michael Jacobson yelling at each other, Cameron Lard laughing on the bench, or Mariel Shayok's injury stemming from a fight?
Those are four bad looks, all kind of coming together at the same time. Which is it for you? And we try not to overthink it. Just like, which one did you think most? That's a bad look.
Man, they're all bad looks. Getting blown out by a bad West Virginia team in March is I think, the worst look.
I feel like that's absolutely what it is. I mean, they win that game. You don't care about any of the rest of this stuff, you know, or even if it's. A close win.
Winning's the ultimate deodorant to these other three.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not just the loss, though. It's the way they lost that game. And the game was tied with 10 minutes to go in the first half. And then they were outscored 34-13 from that point on in the half. I mean, they gave up a 10-0 run and then scored a basket. And then a 9-0 run and then scored a basket. And then there's more runs. I mean, they were just... It was like they just checked out of the game at that part. They were just steamrolled by a team that has no business steamrolling you.
There's no way to not tie that to
at an
competitive
important time
effort.
Of the year, too, right? That can't be understated.
The other quickie poll, and we won't have time to go into detail on this, but it's pretty simple.
Yeah, shout out Wide Right Nighty Light for posting this last night. Which is the biggest cyclone, bigger cyclone collapse this year, basketball, 2019 basketball, or 2002 football?
I think we're going to run into a generation gap here,
no
especially
doubt. Well, it's
when,
recency bias. Yeah. There's no doubt.
Because this is easily football to me. Because you had the Heisman Trophy front runner, and some of you don't know that, but Seneca Wallace was number one on the list. And
starts out with the Eddie Robinson Classic.
Yeah, comes down to a final play, and many people think Seneca was in. There's even T-shirts to this day. Fantastic game against Florida State, Bobby Bowden, all of that.
The Iowa game.
Then Iowa State goes, and in a fantastic second half, comes back, and by the end of the third quarter, has taken control of that game against one of the best Iowa teams of all time, and wins that game comfortably. That's Iowa's only regular season loss. And then there's the run against Texas Tech. And after the Seneca run against Texas Tech, in like the USA Today Heisman watch, Seneca Wallace is number one. He would end up not getting a vote. Not a vote.
Well, they were in top 10.
Yeah,
at that point, when they go to Oklahoma.
They go to Oklahoma, number 9 team
in the
country.
I think they went 1-6 down the stretch.
They fell all the way to the Humanitarian Bowl on a blue field in Boise in the snow.
Well, they had, was it the Tangerine Bowl that they were going to go to? And all they needed to do was beat UConn, a team that had just gone Division I.
Had never beaten an FBS team.
On their home field in front of, I mean, fans who were still absolutely behind them as they always are.
Florida bowl game is a handshake deal away. Yes. All the Cyclones have to do is win that game.
It's just not.
And they lost to UConn.
Not make the bowl committee embarrassed to pick them.
It's football for me.
Let me make a quick devil's advocate point for basketball. 3 weeks ago, you think they could win the Big 12, get a top three seed, play in Des Moines on their way to maybe a great run in the tournament where you're going from Des Moines to Kansas City to Minneapolis. Also, Cyclone fans aren't used to this in basketball.
Those are good points. Those are good points. So we'll see how this vote goes, and we'll come back on the Murph and Andy Show. Reese Morgan, the legendary Hawkeye assistant, on his Hawkeye career.
Murph and Andy sent you.
Time for a little Guess Whose Birthday, powered by Cellular Advantage. Murph, you're up first. Guess Whose Birthday.
Do you still keep in touch with Macaulay Culkin at all?
I haven't seen him for years and years, but I saw him 2 years ago at a Martin Mull art opening. And he was coming out, and he went, "Mommy," and I said, "Baby."
Oh, jeez. Gosh, I watch her on, it's the name of a show, Schitt's Creek, that is on Netflix.
Yeah.
Again, pointing out that is SCH.
Thank you.
I don't want to drag this out. I can't think of her name right now.
Catherine O'Hara.
Catherine O'Hara, gosh, she's so good on that.
I always want to call her Maureen.
Catherine O'Hara's 69.
She's 65, so it's a double miss. Sandy, guess whose birthday?
She lost this betting on the pod races.
You're a slave?
I'm a person, and my name is Anakin.
That is Jake, that little kid that just ruined that Star Wars movie.
That little fart knocker.
He was a fart knocker. Jake, this is a brain fart because I do know this. I've seen interviews with this guy.
I just missed Captain O'Hara. Just concede.
It is Jake. What is that little kid's name? I don't remember.
Jake Lloyd.
Jake Lloyd. Absolutely. He is 34.
He's 30, so that's also a double miss. Murph, guess whose birthday?
I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
That's Bryan Cranston.
It is.
61?
63, so a miss. Andy, guess whose birthday?
Michael, 5K means 5 kilometers, not 5,000 miles.
That's Jenna Fisher.
It is.
Webster Groves, Missouri. Jenna Fisher is 45.
She is 45.
Murph and Andy Show, 1460 KXNO on a Thursday, and happy to have join us Hawkeye assistant football coach Reese Morgan. And coach, what's the past 24 hours been like for you?
A little melancholy. You know, you're very appreciative of the opportunity you've had to work here at the university, and it's really not work. You get to do what you love to do and your passion, and you get paid for it and work with some phenomenal coaches, some great staff members, and most importantly, some outstanding young men. And then, so you're trying to bring that to closure, which is not the easiest thing to do, and then you're trying to turn the page and start a new chapter.
So as you look back on the 19 years at Iowa and you're trying to make the decision, is this the right time? Is this the year? What kind of tipped you to say, you know what, it just feels right?
Well, I don't think there was any right time or wrong time. You know, there was just we had an idea that there was going to be some time here in the next 10 years. You're going to think about it. And Joe, my wife and I talked about it, and, we wanted to get through, through the recruiting season, through the junior days and the clinic I did not decide until Monday night. It was kind of a thing that we both discussed it, and we both felt it was the right thing to do at the right time.
There's all these stories out there of you finding diamonds in the rough, of going to small towns and finding overlooked players. Chad Greenway, just one of many examples. And so many times when we've had Kirk Ferentz here on our show, he has said, I'm just really glad I listened to Rhys Morgan. How did you find these players?
It's not that you hear from different people. So, some of them from a variety of sources. It really helps the connections that we have here in the state of Iowa with coaches. And then, like with a kid like Carl Klug, I got a call from someone that was up in the football camp at USD, a good friend of mine, a very good friend of mine. They were at a team camp, and he says, this kid from Caledonia is killing it. He's really good, so followed up with some, information, touch base with his coach, got a chance to watch his tape, and obviously we thought he was an excellent player, and, no one was really recruiting him, at our level for sure, and we started the process, we were just fortunate enough to get him to come here and be a Hawk.
So Kirk Ferentz always heaps so much praise on you. What's something that stands out to you about Kirk Ferentz?
First of all, he's a Hall of Fame coach, but he's a Hall of Fame person. He's a man of integrity, character, and he hasn't changed since they got here. He's humble, hardworking, and actively involved in football. In 19 years, I've never called him by his first name out of respect to him. He's Coach Ferentz. He's coach to me. And you can't give anybody a higher compliment in this profession. He's the leader. When things were bad in the early years, he was the driving force. He was the one that kept things going and kept the positive attitude. He was picking everybody up in this building, players, coaches, staff, all people, when things weren't looking good. And then when you get the success, he defers the credit to other people. He models the behaviors you want in players, and he lives his life that way. I'm unbelievably appreciative for being around him, because I've learned so much about life and about people from Coach Ferentz.
How difficult was it to tell Coach Ferentz that you're going to call it a career?
Well, I didn't sleep very good the night before, because I just wanted to, have the right words and the right message and be able to do it in a professional, respectful way. And, it's not easy because you don't know. I don't have any hobbies. I don't golf. I don't hunt. I don't fish. I like to ride a bike, and I like to see family. So that's one thing we like to do, and we're going to stay here in Iowa. Obviously, we have grandchildren in the state of Iowa, granddaughter in Cedar Rapids, and grandchildren down in the Phoenix area. So we're going to, spend some time going down there. But we're going to still have, we're going to be here. And it wasn't easy to tell Coach, but it was something that we both collectively thought was the best thing.
Reese Morgan is retiring after 19 seasons at Iowa, not to mention state championships as the head coach at Iowa City West prior to that. Coach Morgan, all the Hawkeye fans listening, all the football fans listening, they love winning. Winning is really fun as a fan, and it's fun as a coach. But what is it about football that you love the most? What was it you think you might miss the most on a daily basis?
The relationships. The relationships with our players, the relationships with the other coaches, the people in the building, the secretaries, the custodians, the equipment staff, the trainers, the video people, all the people it takes to put an organization together. You know, those relationships are the thing you'll miss. From a football standpoint, players probably like games and they do practice. I kind of love practice and love our position meetings because that's where you have an opportunity to teach detail, really get into in-depth, coaching points for players. The same thing with the meeting rooms where you can, get them in a position where they're not feel threatened and they understand that mistakes can be learning experience, but repeat mistakes can't be tolerated. So that the relationships, the process of going through to become a player, and I think when a young man walks in the doors, everybody comes in at different levels. Some maybe have the physical skills and maybe lack the maturity or the mental part of it. Some of them have the intangibles, but aren't developed yet. And so the process that goes through everybody in the building, Chris Doyle does a tremendous job of preparing our kids physically and mentally for, what Division I football is like, especially here at the University of Iowa. But to see a young guy come in that maybe lacks a little confidence, not sure of himself, and that person, gets to work and shows up every day and does his best, which they think is a lot easier to do than we do because, their best isn't our best sometimes. And so to get them to understand that being uncomfortable is part of, Division I athletes. And when you learn to be uncomfortable, you go ahead and, you experience that. So that's the thing that I think is the development of a young person. And then the relationships and then the teaching part of it.
What is it about relationships that you like so much?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I know my grandma, and she was a saint. And she, I think I learned an awful lot about how to treat people from Coach Ferentz, because that's the way he is. That's his makeup, his DNA. But from the people that help raise you, our mom passed away when we were younger. I was in junior high and, the oldest of four. And you learn the people that were around us, the teachers, the coaches, the family members, but those relationships are important and critical. Really, when it's all said and done and you're over with, the thing that the players are going to remember the most is their friends. They're going to be in each other's weddings. They're going to be godparents for other kids. They're going to be a part of something, and going through this experience together enhances those relationships. And, they have great friends in high school and so forth, but when you're living together, going through this in a four-year cycle, with the amount of time that our guys spend together, those relationships deepen. And, I think that's the essence of, that helps in that area. And, if you'd ask any player at any place that they've been, I think they'll go back to the players that they coach with and they are played with and the people who were there. And they'll remember the relationships and the people as much as they'll remember the wins and the losses.
Now, influences can come from anywhere, from all directions. Is there an experience in your life that led to an unlikely influence?
Well, I don't know about unlikely, but most of us as coaches get into this profession because somebody has impacted our life, whether it's a teacher, a coach, a parent, a sibling, someone in our life is it, in my case, it was a high school football coach, and my father, of course, but he was working, trying to provide for a family of four with, you know, by himself. So it wasn't easy for him. And, you know, those people are people that I looked up to, the football coaches, and you know, I wanted to be and emulate them because they had done so much for me and helped me understand that football is a little bit more than blocking and tackling. The lessons that you can learn, if you're willing to apply them and listen and understand them, can be significant life lessons that are going to help you in life.
Well, Coach, let me join the many people wishing you the happiest of retirements. You certainly have earned it, and I know at times you're gonna miss Hawkeye football, but something tells me you won't be too far away.
Well, I appreciate it, and I don't know. It's going to be awfully hard to sit in the stands and watch because there are so many assistant coaches in the stands that have much better ideas after the play's been
done
about what the outcome. But realistically, it will be hard to do. And you know, I go back again and want to thank all the fans that have been so supportive over the years. And excuse me, Coach Ferentz and everybody on the staff and everybody that's been on the staff and all the players, because this is a special place.
Well, you sure left an impression, Coach. Thank you very much, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That is Coach Reese Morgan. Happy retirement ahead for Coach Morgan. And we're back with the Throwdowns on the Murph and Andy Show.
It's time for Throwdowns. Powered by Heartland Tire and Auto Center.
Let's throw it down, Murph. Iowa and Iowa State have a combined 7 basketball games left guaranteed. Now, that number obviously increases with any tournament wins, but if I set the over-under for total wins between the two at 3.5 games, do you take the over or the under?
Oh, it's so hard to do this without knowing what the matchups are in the tournaments, but this could be me overreacting to the past 4 or 5 days, but I would take the under. I think it's more likely 3 wins at this point than 4. Iowa State was so bad last night that we're forgetting how awful Iowa looked at home against Rutgers on Senior Day. And I would expect the Hawkeyes are going to lose tonight. So getting 4 wins out of these two teams at this point, something's got to change, so I'll take the under.
Yeah, I mean, is there one win you can count on? You feel Iowa at Nebraska, that's probably the closest thing.
I feel
thing.
Good about that. And then the first game in the Big Ten tournament for Iowa will be between the winner of the 11-14 game the day before. So you feel good about that game.
How many Big Ten tournament games has Fran McCaffrey won at Iowa in 8 seasons?
2 or 3, yeah, maybe.
I think it's one.
He won one last year.
I think
that.
It's one.
Is it just one?
Isn't it just one?
Man, I don't know.
He's been there a long time.
This is his ninth year.
Feels like he's won more than just one, but I don't know. I mean,
we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, if you get 11-14 team, I mean, that 11 team could be a hungry team. It could be an Indiana or Penn State or somebody. I don't know how good I feel about that. I mean, I feel like I can see 2, but I have a hard time getting to 4. I'm going under.
All right, Andy, Fran McCaffrey is in Madison with his team. No word on where he will be watching tonight's game. Last Saturday, he watched with Gary Dolphin in his office. I think the insight of watching a game with the coach of a team would be fascinating, but it would also just be super tense. Would you like to watch a game with a suspended head coach?
No. No, not in that situation, no. I mean, if things aren't going... I think either way, I mean, if they're going well or they're going poorly, he's just wishing that he's out there and he could do something about it or be there to celebrate. I mean, clearly, if they're going well, there's a giant load off his back. But, you know, watching a game, I've watched a game with coaches before, and it is fascinating. Yeah, I mean, just the insight that they provide, it's amazing. But that's a totally different situation when the guy's been suspended, right? Honestly, I don't think that he should be allowed to watch that game from the building. I mean, I don't think he should be in the building during the game.
I would love to do this. I think it'd be a night you would never forget. I'd be fascinated by this. I'd be in for sure, and I'd I'd really be in if I could watch Fran McCaffrey pretend he wanted to watch the game with Gary Dolphin, because that tells you how bad PR got when Fran is extending that invitation.
Murph, yesterday we had a business lunch, one that somebody else paid for, and I only ate like half of my very tasty sandwich, so I got a to-go box, but I was the only person at the table who did so. Did I commit a faux pas?
Not to me. I didn't take a to-go box because there was nothing to go. I was in the clean plate club. And if I were paying for the meal and you did that, I would just think of that as you not being wasteful. That you're going, because restaurants tend to serve bigger portions than most people eat, that you are just trying to get all the money's worth. You can take that home. You're going to enjoy another meal later. There might be some unwritten rule that I don't know about, but to me, I like that you got the to-go box.
I think, wasn't this on a more not too long ago?
It may have been, yeah.
They were talking about business faux pas, and it was like you don't get a to-go box when you're on a business lunch.
Right.
Because then you're, you know, carrying it around with you the rest of your business day. I guess it's, you know, implied that you're with those people the rest of the day. But, yeah, you were coming back here. You weren't going the same place that the other people were. It didn't matter. So, no, I didn't have any problem with it at all. But then again, yeah, I always clean my plate.
It's good to know. I did eat it for lunch just about an hour ago.
Yeah, so. It's good food. Yeah.
That's from Exile.
Yeah,
it's
from Exile. Yeah, exactly.
Exile is a great restaurant.
All right, the poll is up on Twitter, @Murph_Andy. Who won Throwdowns? Was it Murph or was it Andy?
That's going to do it for hour one of the Murph and Andy Show. We are back for hour two. We'll start with Trending Iowa. It's coming up here on 1460 KXNO.